All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's a PGA podcast for Tuesday, June 23rd. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is Chris Durrell.
Oh, man, it's going good. How are you doing this week?
It is going, man. We're hot and heavy in golf now. I'm going to lead every podcast by saying I never expected to be this all in on golf, but it only took every major sport in the world grinding to an absolute halt for me to be... Yeah, just be shut down and like not be able to do anything. And just everything, literally everything else in the tank for me to get fully into golf. But I feel like I'm here. I feel like after two solid weeks, and we're going to get back to RBC Heritage and we're going to look ahead to the Travelers. But I don't know. I'm glad to have a golf partner now to talk about. You've been trying to get me to talk about golf more consistently for years now. And I think it only took a worldwide pandemic for it to happen.
Yep. But here we are. Thankfully, something good came from it.
Well, you know what the good thing is, and I think one of the cool things, and we're going to get to all this stuff in a second, but golf is being really aided here by the fact that, and you can probably speak more to this, is that every one of these tournaments now is just an absolutely loaded field, right? It's just in a way that maybe some of these tournaments weren't in the past, but you're just getting an all-star. You're getting like a major's worth of talent in the field every single week, right? Do you feel like that? Am I correct in that assessment? I should probably ask you first. But B, is it A correct? And is it two, have you seen sort of a marked difference in like sort of just the quality because of who you have here week in and week out? It seems like because there's just these guys are looking to make up for lost time.
Oh, it feels like a treat. Like you said, it feels like a major almost every week. We've got like 9 of the top 10 players in the world, at least 7 to 9 of the top 10 players in the world every single week. I wrote in the article, this is the third straight week we've had each of the top 5 players in the world. Just absolutely loaded fields full of talent. It's these courses, these events aren't used to having these kinds of fields. So we're getting treated. I mean, it also skews the stats a little bit too, because I mean, we look at some of these courses and some of these statistics and we kind of narrow it down. This is, you know, we look at Pete Dye courses and think, okay, we're going to look at just shorter hitters this week. Well, the reason we do that is because in the past, a lot of these top golfers, Rory and Brooks and DJ and stuff like that, they're not playing these types of courses. So now that we get these guys in these courses, it's kind of changing the way I'm looking at things from a week-to-week basis a little bit more and digging in a little bit more as to not eliminate the long hitters per se. It more just brings more people into the field is what I'm finding. It brings those shorter hitters into the field. So not only do we get better fields now, but they're expanded even more because some of the shorter hitters on tour have a chance to finish top 10 and even and win some of these events just because they're not hurt by some of the longer courses.
Yeah, last week we had the RBC Heritage. I think at one point on Sunday, I want to say it was probably, you know, maybe like the leaders were right around hole 8 or 9. I should have written this down in the moment, but it was something like 12 guys within 2 strokes of the lead at some point on Sunday before the weather delay, which kind of ground things to a halt. And then, but it's really spoke to it. It's like, this is kind of anyone's course at this point, right? There's so many good golfers. It was unrealistic to think that someone was just going to run away with it at that point. And you just had sort of just an all-star team headed down the back nine where it kind of felt like anyone's tournament. And obviously Webb Simpson goes off and wins the tournament. What was your cash lineup look like? I want to actually ask you this real quick, because I think your cash lineup differed from ours and our projections in a way that kind of actually had me tweaking the model in a positive way that I didn't in the past. But what did your cash lineup look like going into last week? Were you on the chalk? I kind of have a sense of what it was, but you didn't tell me exactly where you went all the way up and down.
I was actually pretty heavy on chalk. I built around Webb Simpson, like we talked about, Matt Kuchar and Ian Poulter. Those were the three main guys. They were all, Poulter was 40%, Kuchar was 50, Webb Simpson was 60, and then I had Gary Woodland at 40%. My two lower owned guys that really helped out were Justin Rose at 15% and Joel Damon at 9%. So what I found was Webb Simpson won, obviously. I had no other top 10s, only 2 top 20s in there, and still finished in, like, I think it was top 7% of my cash lineups between, like, the $5, $10, $25 single-entry double-ups. So I was pretty impressed with that. And then FanDuel is pretty similar core as well. Rose, Poulter, Woodland, Kuchar, Damon. The only thing different was I had Maverick McNealy in there, and he was 3% owned at only 81 points. I was definitely not on the chalk outside of Kuchar and Poulter and Woodland over on FanDuel.
And McNealy was looking really great. McNealy was looking like headed for kind of a top 20 finish and then just bombed out on Sunday going +1. So he was, I had him as a top 20 bet at decent odds. And he just, you know, just absolutely just tanked on Sunday. But yeah, it's funny about that because, you know, as coming new to PGA, which I've been very honest about up to this point, is that you know, having somewhat of a less of a sense around what the chalk is going to be, because Kuchar and Poulter, where we pivoted the model a little bit, is kind of bringing a little bit more course history and similar courses into it that I hadn't done to start, bringing in those Pete Dye courses. This is after the fact, which would have had those guys easily as kind of along, eating the chalk correctly, so would have had us there. Instead, it kind of went a little different. Went with Ricky Fowler, Charles Howell, both guys who missed the cut by one. So I'm not devastated by where the system sort of landed on guys. It's just, no, the problem is when you are contrarian in just the wrong way, obviously. And this is the case where, you know, if each of these guys just hits one more birdie, they're through to Saturday, and I'm actually not probably maybe I'm cash. Not complaining as much. Yeah, maybe I'm just not complaining as much. Maybe I don't want to be short-sighted in terms of how we pivot things, but to have a miss by one is just such a devastating thing. It just really, you can't make it up. So in general, I still feel good about it. I think tweaking the system to kind of factor that in a little bit more along the skill set does make a lot of sense. We'll talk about that for some of the picks this week. We talked about Webb Simpson. He was the one outright bet winner that I put in last week, and he got there 30-1, which I was a nice way to kind of make up for the weekend. Some of the show, and I'm going to say this right now to anyone listening, playing PGA, go sign up for the Optimizer, dfsr.com/membership. You go on there, you'll have access to the PGA Optimizer. It's worth it just for Sunday Showdown alone on DK. Yes. Like, I don't know what people are doing here. I kind of texted you flabbergasted on Sunday. I was like, the ownerships, you could just make a lineup for cash with the top six guys. Like, the top six guys, yep, where win points count. And I forget exactly. I could go back and look at my lineup now. But it was Answer. It was Webb. It was Berg. It was the only guy that wasn't in there was Sergio Garcia. It was like
Answer was in there.
Yeah,
and you were telling me Answer was super low owned, right?
He was like 25%. He was in third place, second place going into the Sunday or something like that. It made me think I made a mistake on how we were factoring scoring in. So anyway, worth it for the showdown. Worth it for showdown lineups. Yeah, it's just, I think it's almost like people don't realize that they're factoring in win points for Sunday. There's nothing else that makes sense, honestly. The only reasonable explanation is you're trying to be different and also trying to pick out the best golfers when not factoring in the win points matter. Anyway, so go sign up for that over there. That alone, we've made some updates for the system this week. I'm feeling very confident about it. So we're going to get into this week's, again, absolutely loaded field and some new guys, some very good golfers that have not been there for the first two tournaments that are going to make their first appearances this week as well. Talk to me a little bit about what to expect here at the Travelers, what kind of stats you sort of hone in on, what kind of course we're looking at, and then we'll get into some of the guys for this week.
For sure. So the third week back here, we're at the Travelers Championship. The course is another Pete Dye design like last week at the RBC Heritage Harbortown. It's the TPC River Highlands. Par 70s, a little bit shorter, 6,841 yards. Smaller greens, again, right around that 5,000 square feet. So the stroke screened approach is definitely boosted again for me. And then you're going to have to look at a little bit around the green. I think overall, a strong tee to green game, which is your off the tee, your approach, and your around the green, is very important. And of those three, stroke screened approach is by far, I would probably say, the most important by about, I don't know, 20-30% in my weighting system. And then looking at that specifically, the fairways are a little bit wider, so we're going to see a little bit higher. We're close to that 70% driving accuracy over the last 5 years here, which we were looking at about 58 to 62% over the last couple weeks. So there's going to be some more fairways hit, which means there's going to be some more greens. I think we're going to get some lower scores. Over the last few years, we have seen, like last year, Ches Reavy won minus 17. Bubba's won here, minus 17. Jordan Spieth, minus 12. So we're looking at like minus 14 to minus 17. And then like we talked about the last 2 weeks, I think just because of the strength of the field that we don't normally see at this event, I think that's probably going to be what we see again, is like 16 to 20, somewhere in there. Like we seen last week, Webb was at 22, and I think on normal years that course was like minus 12 to 15, 16. So that's kind of the way I see it playing out here again. So birdie or better percentage is definitely something I have in my model each and every week. But yeah, looking at, you know, the cut line's usually around even, plus one. The difficulty ranking here is not that difficult when looking at the actual rankings compared to other courses on tour. 19th, 25th, 21st, 26th, and 39th hardest course over the last 5 years. So not too tough, but you don't want to miss a ton of fairways. The The rough can get a little tall, so you don't want wild drivers. And if you're going with some of those long guys, like we talked about in the opening, I don't think these courses necessarily cater to the shorter players and eliminate those longer hitters as much as maybe it just brings some of those shorter hitters into play. So I'll definitely be looking at that as well. So if you're getting a long hitter, make sure he's got some accuracy to him. See Bryson DeChambeau. I'm sure we're going to talk about him here shortly.
Yep. Yeah, so the other fact that sort of the course history piece that we have factored into the model now, we did bring in TPC Sawgrass into this week, right? What was the other one that we brought in? It was TPC Sawgrass that you said was the other Pete Dye course. It was this one, and then was it last week's the Heritage?
Harbortown from last week.
Yep, there you go. So those are the courses that we have in there on Chris's recommendation. That would be the ones that would probably most closely mirror, besides what you just did here historically, which I think is something that matters for golf. It shouldn't be all of it. It shouldn't be the only thing you look at. You need to kind of take in the golfer's full resume, I think. You don't want to use 4 to 8 rounds to be the only reason you decide how to play a golfer. But it should factor into this be some percentage. I think we have it somewhere between 12 and 15%, which might be even on the little of the high side. Not per round, by the way. This is like as a kind of a whole view.
Overall.
Let's actually start with DeChambeau, because I actually think he's an interesting case study in what you do with a projection around a guy. So it's clear, even from my novice eyes, that Bryson DeChambeau came back from the quarantine, just like straight up with a different body. I don't think there's any other way to say it, right? Like, the guy looks like he ingested half of a golfer during the thing. Like, he added some other older golfer onto his physique, and now he's like kind of, has the strength of 2 of 1.5 golfers. Am I right? Like, what do you do with a guy? He's just like a different guy. We talked about this with Dustin Johnson. We talked about it with Jason Day. We talked about, clear things that have happened to a guy. We talked a little bit about this Harris English the first week, right? Like, clear differences around guys and sort of how their play is and maybe their style, or in this case, their body. Like, what do we do with DeChambeau? He's just a different dude. And I'm wondering if we should just take a smaller sample size, or if it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a weird question for me to ask, but it's just clear that the guy just came back a different dude. And I just don't know how we factor that correctly into our projections.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. It seems like he's a completely different golfer. He's put on, I think he's up to like 239 pounds. And I think like middle of last year, he was somewhere in that like 190, 195 range. So he's put on a ton of weight. He's got that strength. He can really take advantage of this course, like we talked about last week, these shorter courses, because he doesn't just gain strokes off the tee. He's hitting like 9 irons, 180 yards. He's hitting 9 irons when other guys are using maybe like a 6 or a 7 type thing, which is incredible, because he's getting more height on the ball, which also gives him an advantage on the smaller greens. The higher you get the ball, obviously it's going to come down and land on the green and be able to stick on the green versus hitting it at a lower trajectory and rolling off. So he's got that advantage too. So he really does fit. He's one golfer that just stands out. It just seems like he's a robot. But from a modeling standpoint, I know we talked about this off air, when you expand his sample size, obviously we're getting some of that old data in there from the start of last season, which he had a win there, but he also had three straight missed cuts last year. That kind of factors in there too. So I'm kind of on an individual basis reducing the sample size for Bryson a bit, because since the return of golf, his ball striking has been absolutely elite, second in this field. He's gaining almost 3 strokes per round ball striking, only behind Abraham Answer, who I also like again this week as well. The price has started to come up. He's only $200 cheaper than Rory, so I think people maybe still riding Rory a bit, but I think Bryson's going to be one of the top 5 owned players this week, and I am reducing that sample size a little bit just because he has been absolutely elite.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I'm torn. I'm torn on this one because I don't want to be hasty in making changes around what a guy's just done historically. And I also want to be, one of the keys to following sports and having good models is to understand when things are different. We talk about this with NBA. It's like, I need to understand when a guy's possibly is playing hurt, right? Like, I need to understand when there's been a clear shift in how a player is approaching the game, right? We do this with, honestly, maybe the better example is we do this with starting pitchers all the time, right? Like, is the pitchers to say, oh, Matthew Boyd never struck anybody out. Okay, now he strikes everybody out. Okay, is it luck or did he make a clear change? Oh, it turns out he's just throwing 2 different pitches and he's throwing faster, right? Okay, so now we can readjust our historical model to maybe take into account that this guy has made clear changes around how he's approaching the game, or how he, you know, what he's, you know, in this case, maybe Bryson has just approached it by having a different body type. So this one's a tough one for me. I will say our projections are most at odds. Right now, he is plus 135 to finish in the top 10. I should have had the odds to win up in front of me. It's probably like plus 700, but I'll click on it right now. Plus 1200. He's tied. He's the best third. He's tied for the best win odds with Rory and Justin Thomas at plus 1200. And this is where our model most disagrees with this, because it has kind of Rory and Justin Thomas and a few other guys up there. And I want to take into account that that might be a real thing too. So yeah, I'm with you. The ownership piece, I'm not sure about, but the clear difference in just, you know, him being maybe just a different dude, is very much a real thing. After him, where are we looking in sort of this top tier? I do think there's probably still some pricing inefficiencies on both these sites, maybe on the recent performances. Where else are you looking in the top, maybe in that top tier? I'm going to call that top tier on DraftKings, the 10,000 or above tier, which is there's five or six guys. There's six golfers in that tier, and it's right around the 12,000, 11,000 to 12,000 range on FanDuel. What other kind of top tier guys are you looking at this week?
Just kind of as core guys, I only got two more in that tier, and it's Webb Simpson and Brooks Koepka for me. Webb is just, they're talking about it on TV last night, how he's just like super underrated. He's now moved up to number five in the world, but he doesn't get the same recognition, I guess you'd say, as like Rory or Justin Thomas or John Rahm or Koepka or, you know, those guys. He doesn't have the same name factor, I guess, but he's an elite player. He's playing elite. He fits these shorter courses. And then Koepka looks like he's really, really coming back into form. And that's a bad sign for everyone else on tour. This isn't a major. I know that's a big narrative with him. This seems like a major, though. We talked about that. He maybe isn't the most consistent. Like, he's lost almost five strokes on approach, but we talked about last week, he lost 4.9 strokes on approach at the Charles Schwab. He lost zero, so he's right back to even. He gained five strokes differential from one tournament to the next, so that's good to see. That resulted in a top seven finish, or a T7, at the RBC Heritage last week. I think with his putter being so hot right now, his tee off the tee game, gaining so many strokes off the tee, his approach game coming around, the upside for him, he just seems too cheap for the number four player in the world at only 10K. It feels like he should be right behind Bryson DeChambeau, in my opinion.
Yeah, we have him projected right in the same range. Koepka and DeChambeau are right around 88 DK points. I know that's going to seem low, but you got to kind of back out some of the win points, because golf is very top heavy when you kind of get into the final. So I get that number seems low for an entire weekend, but it's because it's a weighted mean average. You can't just, you know, assign all the win points to a guy and just assume they're going to win. You kind of have to sort of tier it like that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, so if I let me give you this list because I'm so we have Webb Simpson second, and I will say from a historical point of view, this system was on Webb Simpson way early, like before this run. It was like it was very clear from a numbers point of view that he was ready to sort of be consistently among the best, and now he just the price has come up commiserately. When we were kind of testing this a year ago, I remember him sort of standing out. Right now we have Rory, Webb Simpson, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, and then Patrick Cantlay is fifth overall in terms of projection. You know, this is above guys like Koepka, above guys like DeChambeau, above Justin Rose, right? Now, Cantlay has not played, did not play the first two events here. Now, I didn't get a good reason why. The notes just said he just chose not to, so I'm not exactly sure the reason why. What do you think about this projection for him? Because it's not a guy that's played. Obviously, you have a sample size on him. Worst win odds among that group, if you look at consensus betting. But our system has him really damn high, and he's way cheaper than a lot of these other guys. He's 9,800 on DraftKings this week. A little closer on FanDuel, where they kind of got the, like, he's right in the same price range as Koepka and Bryson. Yeah. But what do you think about this Cantlay thing? Because this is drawing him out as a major value, and I'm wondering if the fact that he hasn't played these first two events is kind of throwing that off at all.
Yeah, I really always like Cantlay. He's super consistent. I get it from you know, a system standpoint. Going back to like the Players last March, he hasn't missed a cut since that missed cut at the Players last March, and he's only finished outside the top 25 twice in that time. And that is, I don't have the exact, it looks like about 15 events here that I'm looking at. He's just super consistent. He's got an elite ball striking. The putter was off a little bit the last two events, but generally he's an above-average putter. He fits the model in terms of Pete Dye courses. I think the price is down, like you said, just because he hasn't played. Kind of the same with Paul Casey. I'm sure we're going to get into him next. Yeah. Why those guys didn't play, I couldn't find anything anything that would be like damning to his projection why they didn't play. They just maybe didn't play. He's also finished top 15 here, or T15, in the last 2 years at this course. So he literally checks every single box, including that value that you talked about, that he's under 10K. Normally in a tournament like this, he's going to be one of those guys, and that 10K and up group is going to be expanded because he's going to be in there.
Yeah, I think right now I'm going to probably be one of these things where you look at pricing inefficiencies and just say Cantlay is a DraftKings play, and maybe I can take a wait-and-see approach on FanDuel simply because I'm maybe not buying any value there. Like when like I said, he's the same price as Koepka. I think, you know, at that point, I probably just take Koepka and just know that he's been playing, you know, how well he's been playing, and just say maybe the projection's not going to really round this out, but I can just feel better about playing Koepka. I can feel better playing DeChambeau at 400 more, right? Where I can just buy something cheaper. If that line of thinking makes sense, because I don't want to do the thing where it's his first tournament back, so we should wait and see, because that, I think, can generally be an incorrect approach. But
especially if he's got ownership.
Exactly. Well, and I think I'm sort of new to these streets, so I'm happy to be wrong here. But I just feel like the price, honestly, if you just model price based on where his sort of win odds are, he is, like, right now, this is for a top 20 finish, so I keep kind of toggling back between top 20s and wins. He's top 9 right now, right? He's a top nine. He's a top 9 in terms of overall just projected where he's going to land. And from a pricing standpoint on DraftKings, he is, and I should have sorted this ahead of time. I keep saying things I should have done that I haven't done. He's 1-2. I guess he's actually right there. Yeah, no, he's right there, but he's significantly, like, he's 1,400 cheaper than Rory. So it's like, you know, he's 1,300 cheaper than DeChambeau. And I think at that point, you're just buying. Well, talk to me about Paul Casey then, too, because Paul Casey's another one that's just coming back. Decent projection on him, looking like a nice value. Doesn't stand out as much as Cantlay here, but also coming pretty cheap from a guy that's had decent results.
And he's not always a guy that I'm looking at, like, for win. And I know he kind of broke that mold of people always saying, like, he can't win tournaments. He's very consistent, but he can't win. He has won. He has shown us that upside. The price is just, I don't know, it just seems to be too cheap for a guy that, for one, sure, he's just coming back, but he's also finished top 5 here in 4 or 5 times he's been to this event, and 17th. T17 was the other finish. He went into the break with good form. So, I mean, he's got that on his side, too. He just kind of, like Cantlay, he kind of touches on everything except for those win odds like you talked about. But generally, he's tremendous in terms of consistency, and he comes in at under 9K. If he finishes top 10 this week, even I would say, let's just go ahead and say top 15. So if say he finishes T14, T13, I bet you his price in his very next event is going to be in that 9,500 to 10K range. So it does feel like we are getting a bit of a value on Casey, considering, you know, unless you can find something of why he didn't play, you know, since, you know, COVID came or the COVID break ended or whatever you want to call it.
And I couldn't find that. Like, it was like that wasn't readily available, except for maybe just the scheduling thing or just, you know, sort of where he was and ready to get back. There was no alarm bells in terms of why he didn't come back. I want to throw out one more sort of top tier guy, and then we'll start hunting some value in the middle and lower tiers. A few weeks ago, in the last couple weeks, we talked about Dustin Johnson and being concerned with the back issues and having a clear difference and like having, I believe, back surgery. And right, it was back surgery that he had, and is that correct? Yeah. Okay.
Last September.
Right, and then maybe having some different issues with form after that. And now we get basically a top 15 finish last week and has looked okay since the return. Are we ready to like sort of recorrect the issues that we had with Dustin Johnson or the worry we had around Dustin Johnson, considering that, you know, at one point he was one among the very best golfers in the world and had dipped maybe because of the injury. I know he didn't make he missed the cut at the Schwab, came in 17th last week, 48th. I guess you have to go back to the WGC, 48th, and a top 10 at the Genesis. Is that enough to say, is maybe one thing at RBC enough to say, I don't need to worry about Dustin Johnson anymore? Or are we still sort of concerned with the form based on the back?
No, I'm pretty much getting back on board with him, and I almost want to get on it now before he's back in that 10K range, 9,400. He's not a guy I'm going to look at in cash. I'm not that confident in him with that price yet. I definitely like going a whole different direction in terms of a more balanced lineup, and he's not included. I think he's going to be a nice GPP pivot. It doesn't seem like he's getting a lot of buzz right now, but 9,400 seems too cheap. The one thing that's really off on him right now is the putting. He was a little bit better. He only lost like 0.2 strokes putting last week after losing 1.5 the week before, and then the WGC Mexico back in February, he lost over 6. So he's been trending with the putter, which is awesome because historically he's gaining about 0.5 stroke to 1 stroke per round putting. The off the tee game has been incredible. The approach game came back last week. He gained over 3 strokes on the approach. He finished with a T17. I think the upside for the win is coming back 100% for him. As soon as he gets that putter and starts gaining some strokes, dropping a few more birdies, he's going to be putting together some top 10s and pushing for that win. So I love the value here, and I'm going to be on board for GPP.
Yeah, I didn't reduce his projection based on some sort of wait and see after this because I felt like this was the C part of the wait and see. Maybe that's incorrect, and you can at me if you think that's wrong, and I'm happy to have a discussion about it. But it's felt like to me, if you can round back into form over the course of a weekend, even for kind of a one-off, then that to me shows me that at least it's possible, right? It's not that it's and look, you say the same thing. You say the same thing about the missed cut in the week before. Maybe that's just, you know, maybe I'm looking into being too short-term sample size, but I don't know. Plenty of guys miss cuts. It just happens, right? You can miss cuts. It's harder to, in some ways, it feels like it's harder to come in top 20 than it is to miss a cut in golf. Maybe that's a weird way to put it, but if you look at this top 20 list, I mean, this is a freaking who's who basically from last week, right? So it's like, it wasn't like he was just kind of sneaking in along the edges. He was just very good to come in that T17 because the group of golfers above him is sort of an all-star team.
Yeah, and that would have been a top 10 if he probably sunk 3 more putts, I bet you. It's that close. And the one thing that is the difference between those two tournaments since the return with Dustin Johnson, the one thing that really stands out is that approach shot. He went from losing 1.5 strokes on the approach. All the other stats are almost identical across the board. He missed the cut at the Charles Schwab. He gained 3.1 strokes, which is a difference of 4.6 strokes on approach. He finished with a T17. So I think that's the biggest difference. So if that's coming along, the putter's coming back, yeah, I'm on board.
All right, let's go filter down a little bit into some more value plays here. Here I'm kind of looking in that like maybe 8K to 7, high 7K range on DraftKings, probably higher 8K range, maybe getting closer to 9 on FanDuel. guys that we're going to need if we're going to play guys like Webb Simpson, if we're going to play guys like Bryson DeChambeau, even in cash this week, we're going to have to populate it with some other cheaper guys. Who are you kind of sniffing out on this list? I think we're going to have some overlap here, though not 100%. Where do you look in when you're looking to round out some maybe some cash value, knowing that we're going to probably have to pay up for at least a couple of these top-tier guys?
Yeah, the first guy I'm looking at 8,100, kind of in that mid-tier, I like a lot. This is his first time here, so he gets dinged a little bit in my own personal model on my main model on the sheet. But if I take out course history, he jumps up big time. Matthew Fitzpatrick, coming over from the European Tour. He's got 5 career wins over there. Still only 25 years old, so he could kind of tell you his pedigree and his talent level and stuff without even going in and digging into the stats or anything like that. But 5 wins on the Euro Tour at 25 years old is pretty impressive. This is his first season on the PGA Tour. It's been pretty impressive. He's made all 7 cuts with 2 top 10s, they're both top 25s, obviously, and also finished last week with a T14 at the RBC Heritage. All 4 rounds of 68 or under. Actually, since the return of golf, he shot all 4 rounds in each tournament, so 8 rounds under 69 or under, so under 70. So he's getting those bonuses on DraftKings for all 4 rounds under 70 right now. The stats don't stick out a whole bunch. When you're breaking down the approach stuff, he's kind of in that 30th to 50th rank in my model, looking at the last 24 rounds data for all the golfers in the field. So he does, but he's solid across the board in terms of those. So kind of consistent there. So 8,100, I'm on board. He only went up 200 after a T14 last week. So on board with him. Brian Harman is a guy that stands out in the mid 7K range. He's got top 10s in 3 of his last 5 events here at this tournament, and he's made the cut in 7 of 8 trips here at this tournament. Comes in with some form, top 30 finishes in his last 2. And then Keegan Bradley is just an excellent ball striker, 7,400. He finished T2 here last year, and he's got a 24.2 average finish over his last 5 tournaments here. So those 3 would be my core, kind of in that low 7 to 8K range.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think among that group, Fitzpatrick is probably the best projected, I think, among that group. He's got, decent sort of similar course history. Keegan Bradley, not as high on, though. I wonder if the sample size is kind of doing him a little dirty. I'm not going to look into that one. Well, he hasn't played as much on these courses. They only have 8 rounds on the similar courses, though. He's been awesome in those 8 rounds that he did play. So that is probably helping him a little bit. Decent projection, just probably not a guy over the long term that has come in as close as our system wants in terms of safety. I'm contractually obligated to talk about Tony Finau. This is guy, every single week. I should just pre-record a Tony Finau thing and then just say
we could rename the pod, couldn't we?
I should see if I could get him to sponsor it, actually, because then it would seem less weird. At least it would be unless you would know, why I was talking about it. I would say this segment sponsored you by Tony Finau. We just have to talk about him. Then you would know at least where my bread is buttered. But we joke about it every week, and then every week he just makes the cut and just is good, right? I just don't know what to say about him at this point. From a cash game perspective, he's going to, until something major happens, we just have a monster sample size of this guy just being good, not great. He's not going to win the tournament. He's not going to light the world on fire. But at 8,200 on DraftKings, is it wrong? He's not 100% play for us when you run all 50 lineups or whatever. But he's 84%. He's the second highest guy. I want to talk about some of these other guys that are kind of showing up high, but second highest guy that comes into lineups. He's kind of right there with Cantlay. Mm-hmm. Does it seem wrong when you see this name every week? Because we laugh about it, but then it's kind of at the end of the week when it's Sunday and he's still made the cut and kind of finished okay from a cash game perspective. He doesn't kill you either.
He doesn't kill you, ever. What I like most this week, and I like Tony Finau every week, just like you, is the price. The price has slowly gone down over the last 10 events. He was 8,100 at the Players, 8,200 here, but we've seen him as high, the American Express back in January. He was 10,500, and then he was 93 at the Farmers in a pretty good field, 96 in the Waste Management in a pretty good field there. So seeing his price here this week is what really stands out to me. And like you said, every week he's just absolutely just super consistent. He's only missed 2 cuts in 11 events this year. He only missed 5 in 25 last year. And when he does, he's in that top 25 to top 40, which is not going to hurt you in cash, but he does give you that top 10 upside. I don't think he's got win potential. I mean, anyone can win with, you know, put together four good rounds. But in this kind of field, I don't see him as a winner. I wouldn't bet him outright. But top 20, definitely going to be a bet for me almost every single week, provided the number is there. And in a field like this, I think we're getting him at, let me just see here. Yeah, plus 225. So I'll take that for a top 20 bet and a cash game, almost a cash game lock at 8,200. I mean, that's just too cheap for him considering that his prices came down a lot throughout the season.
And just remember, like that, you know, those DraftKings average points factor in the win stuff, right? And so when it factors in the wins and the top, you know, the top 10 finishes and whatnot, or top 20 finishes, he's never gonna spike those numbers because he just doesn't really win the tournaments. But he's never gonna he's rarely gonna bottom out and kill you on it. And that's why the price kind of keeps going down, because these other guys have the upside to actually win, which drives their price and their average DK points up correctly, by the way.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at just getting, you got to get six guys through the cut most weeks. Sometimes you can maybe sometimes get away with the fifth if they're chalk, right? Like if you stumble your way into a miscut on the chalk, you can kind of back your way into cash. That can happen. But remember, for cash, cuts are key. And if you're new to golf here, it just really can't be overstated. You got to get every guy through. You got to get the guys through to Saturday. You need guys that are going to be playing
now.
Saturday. Oh, right. These are all-star fields. Like, you just can't.
Well, we're down to also this season is new with the cut line is T65 and ties. It used to be T70. So we're losing like 10 to 12 players per tournament almost this year versus last year. And there's no more made cut, whatever you want to call that, where you make the cut, but they do another cut on Saturday. I can't think of the word right now. My mind has gone blank here, but we don't have that anymore either. So less players are making it to the weekend, which is making it harder. So, yeah, it's more important than ever to get 6 of 6 through.
Yep. Okay, let me give you a couple other guys. These guys are all...
MDF. It's the MDF. I figured it out. Sorry.
There you go.
Boom.
Buddy, you got a lot in your mind. I didn't know what that was at all. So believe me, you're many laps ahead of me on this, no matter even if you couldn't think of that or not. Ian Poulter, I think he's going to see pretty high ownership on him again on DraftKings, 7,800. Just the course stuff, the recent finishes, the fact that he was chalk last week and performed. I think all that. Am I wrong by that one? I'm just kind of I'm not trying to do a throwaway here, but he, you know, T14 was up near the top. I think heading into Saturday. I mean, basically finished near the top anyway. It's just six strokes off the lead. But I think we see him probably as chalk again, would be my guess. No Kuchar this week, but I think you see Poulter's ownership go up. I want to throw out three names sort of right in a row here for you, because they're all sort of in this, or excuse me, three names total. They're more in line on FanDuel in terms of pricing. Two of them are in the sub 7K range on DraftKings. No particular order, but guys the system like that I kind of texted you about last night. Harry Higgs, Matt Naismith, Bud Cauley. 81 for Higgs on FanDuel, 83 for Naismith, 86 for Cauley, and over on DraftKings, Naismith 66 and Harry Higgs 64. Seeing these names kind of cheaper, you know, we have these loaded fields. Maybe these aren't the names that jumped into your, if you're kind of a casual golf fan, what do you hear? What do you think when you see these names potentially as cash game plays, knowing that maybe I got to spend up a little more to the top end range, because doesn't seem like we're as mispriced this week on DraftKings like we were last week.
Yeah. Higgs stands out the most. I'll start with him. I'll lead off with him. Dude's pretty much a legend. Go check out his Twitter account if you haven't yet. But looking at it statistically, what scares me about him off, you know, first look when I start looking at his stats, our strokes gained approach is like he can lose up. He lost 5.3 strokes last week, still finished T52. What saves him and makes him a little more consistent, because he has made 7 straight cuts on tour in some pretty darn good fields. We're talking the Farmers, Waste Management, AT&T Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. The Honda had a good one. Arnold Palmer, Charles Schwab, and RBC since the return. These are all good fields with tons of good golfers. He has made the cuts in all of them with 3 top 25s in there as well. What keeps him is that off the tee game. He's gaining strokes off the tee, and he's had an elite putter. He's only lost less than, or he's gained 2 or more strokes in 4-5 of his last 6 events. He had one really bad one there at the Honda, still finished T58, where he lost 5.6 strokes. That's too bad, because that's the one event where he gained strokes on approach. So if he could have put it all together, he probably, you know, would have been in that top 10 range again. But I love the safety, and I think the upside is there if he can get his approach game on. So I mean, at 6,400, 8,100 on FanDuel there, I think he makes a lot of sense. You also mentioned Matthew Naismith.
You know, so hold on. Before you move on, return, to, you know, I gave you the three guys.
Go Higgs.
And I'm, Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm just going to. I will say around Higgs, he's right at the sample size floor that I. And by that, that's not a good thing, by the way. Like, he's barely scraping into it. Like, there's a certain number that I've sort of just arbitrarily chosen as the number of rounds you need to play for me to start feeling confident around the projection. He's barely, he's at like 54, according to our system right now. That's barely there in terms of feeling confident. Now, he's been crazy consistent, like the standard deviation, 0.03, which is really, really, and these numbers aren't going to mean anything to you if they're just coming out of thin air. I just want to say that's so low, which means he's just doing the exact same thing basically every round. There's a lot of value in that. But again, 54 rounds compared to, like, I've just throw out random guys. Brian Harmon's 128, right? Okay, Chesson Hadley, 104. I'm just going by like sort of alphabetical list around where we are with rounds played. So 54 is basically half of where I want to be kind of with a sample size. And so that actually scares me a little bit. So I'm kind of, this is why I throw these guys out there to you, because I'm like, you know, I kind of need to be either talked in or talked out, because at that point, at 54 rounds, I'm like, I could be easily talked out of it without losing any sleep about it. The other guy was Matt Naismith. Not exactly in the same range in terms of where we are. Oh, no, sorry. Right. Sorry. Take that back. Right in the same range of where we were in terms of sample size. Only 48. Been very good. Not as consistent, but better on average. Really small course history. I don't know. Where do you land with him? Because this is another one where I'm like, I kind of butt clench a little bit around just not having maybe as much data as we would want.
Yeah, he completely turned things around this season. Like, he missed, I understand if you extend that sample size into 2019, he missed four of six cuts in the 2019 calendar year. He's since made, looks like about eight of nine, and the approach game is what really stands out. It's been near elite. He's gained six plus strokes on approach in two of his last four events. He's gained at least a stroke in six of last seven. So he's been really good. In terms of that, the other thing that stood out with me with Higgs there that I look at on the sheet is salary to odds differential. So he's 63rd in terms of win odds at 201-1 on my sheet. I think he's dropped actually a little bit, but he's 88th in DK rank. So there's a huge discrepancy there. It's the second highest number on my sheet in terms of looking at value and DK pricing compared to win odds. So that was the other thing that stood out. Naismith, in comparison, is only a plus 9 versus a plus 25 for Higgs. So still a little bit of value there. When looking at that metric, but both of them I think do make sense just because of how consistent they be, but they've been playing almost, like, looking at the stats, opposite kinds of golf. Like, off the tee, Higgs has been elite and he's had an elite putter, versus Naismith has been a little bit less in that area, but he's been elite on the approach shot. So it's definitely interesting,
which would explain the standard deviation differences, right? Like, if your standard deviation is going to be lower if you're just more accurate to start and to finish rather than in between. Yep. So it's like, I just not trying to be like trying to take anyone to school here, because I'm very rarely going to do that with golf, but it makes sense why one would be a little bit more volatile than the other. Last guy, Bud Cauley. Thoughts on Cauley? Another guy that's kind of creeping around this area. I'm not feeling amazingly confident with it, although I'll just check his sample size real quick too. I believe it was a little higher than these are too, but when you see Cauley maybe creeping around some lineups, a name that you can kind of sink your teeth into, again, he has 109 rounds, so definitely more low standard deviation, but probably a little more close to an average golfer than the other two guys have been over that sample size. Cauley, when you see his name, only 6,900 on DraftKings.
Yeah, I love the approach game that he has, and the around the green game. I mean, that is enough there to give him some consistency, so I can see why he makes, you know, a lot of cuts. He's had some success here. Just the fact that he's 6,900 while these other guys, there is probably five guys below him in price that I like better, so I probably won't get to Cauley myself this week, but I can definitely see why he stands out in the system. His price even dropped on both sites, you know, compared to last event too. I know he missed the cut. He finished, I think, T100 right around there after two top 35 finishes. Actually, he made the cut in five events before that. So I can see why, looking at the system, why he would stand out. But for me, I've got guys underneath him that I like more. We talked about two in Naismith and Higgs. The other two that I wrote up in my article were Tyler Duncan was one of them. And Will Gordon was the other, if you really want to dip down. He was the 2019 SEC Player of the Year. Pretty solid start, making six cuts, four of six cuts on his PGA since he's joined the PGA Tour this season, with a top 10 and three top 25. So for a guy that young, that's pretty impressive. Nothing really jumps off the page in terms of stats. outside of maybe his off the tees 35th and 44th in par four scoring and 12th in par four scoring from 400 to 450 yards. There's eight of the 12 par fours this week are in that range. So that's just a couple things that stood out for me. That's more of a stars and scrubs GPP play. Duncan, I would consider at 6,500 in cash games.
Talk me into Duncan. Because I've never call you out on this stuff, but Duncan, talk me into him because this is interesting. This is where he doesn't stand out for you. Well, his standard deviation is really high, but I'm actually wondering if there's a mistake here. So can you talk me into Duncan while I look back through this to make sure that I just haven't missed something.
No, not at all. He's missed a lot of cuts. He's missed eight cuts in 17 events this year. He had missed four of five before the break, and the other one where he did make the cut was only a T64, and he hadn't had a top 60 finish since January at the Tournament of Champions. So it may seem a little crazy, but he's came back and he's been tremendous since coming back. T38 and T28. So very small sample size for me. So I get why the system's maybe off of him. It's the approach game that really turned around for him. Actually, his complete tee to green game has really come around. Off the tee approach, around the green. His putting has been good. So I'm just kind of riding with that with the price because I feel like he should be kind of in that low 7K range because he does have some course history here as well. And he's one of the guys that does stand out a little bit in terms of my salary to odds. He's a plus 16 there on both sides.
And, by the way, that's a fine explanation for me because I think that we can play fast and loose sometimes with where we look at in terms of wanting to make changes based on recent form. I think golf is the one place where I'm willing to make a concession around recent form that I'm not able to do in basketball. I'm not able to. Well, I go the opposite way. Oh, no, excuse me. I go the opposite way in baseball, right? I go the same way in baseball where it's like recent form means almost nothing to me because we have, huge subsets of data where we can say, hey, look, I get the guys on a hot streak, but it just doesn't matter, right? It's like if streaks were so predictive, then why do they end, right? So it's like it's not around that. I think golf specifically around we have just huge sample size differences with some of these guys and the conditions change more than any other sport really. So yes. I think that I'm willing to make a few more concessions around sample size. Any other final thoughts here? Any bets you like? We'll just finish it off real quick here. I can throw out a couple bets that I liked for this week. It's mostly going to be around top 10s, top 20s. Anything that's kind of standing out to you right now?
I'm probably going to run top 20s here again, and I'm looking at Finau and Fitzpatrick at plus 225. I like those numbers for top 20 finishes out of those guys, as well as I can't decide on Dustin Johnson at plus 137. That seems like it's getting a little short for a top 20, but still, if you're going and putting, let's just say, $10 or whatever on Dustin Johnson for a top 20 at that price, you're getting 23.75 return, so I guess that's not bad. I maybe wait on that, maybe put some outright on him right now instead, because he's normally up in that top tier range in terms of win, and he's plus 2,800 right now. This is more of a jumping on before, like we kind of did with Webb early on, like you had talked about. Because I think Dustin Johnson, if he finishes with another top 10, he's going to be up in that plus 1,200, plus 1,500 range in terms of outright odds going forward. So I think we can maybe jump on him a little bit there as well. And then Abraham Answer, I haven't completely decided, but plus 3,500 outright seems pretty good for me there as well.
I like those two. This is the guy we didn't talk about, but in terms of win odds, in terms of our system, I rarely put in the win odds one in because unless I'm getting like crazy odds in terms of something that our system is drawing out as a huge difference, but two guys that do stand out. Well, Poulter is plus 8,000 right now. I got him at plus 8,000, which felt pretty good based on even like recent form plus, just his ability to probably
course
land.
History and stats and everything.
Exactly, like plus 8,000 kind of felt like a kind of a crime to not be able to sort of get on board with it. The other guy we didn't talk about, but I'm actually wondering your opinion, was JT Poston. He was plus 6,600 to win, and his recent form plus, he's actually another one that stands out in terms of win odds compared to price, I think a little bit, but he's T8 and T10 since coming back from the break. Missed the cut at the Arnold Palmer, okay, whatever, but then 35, 30, 37, 37, and then he had 11 and a 14. So it's not like this guy hasn't been in and around the top of leaderboards. Not a guy we talked about, but a guy that our system over the long-term model is actually calling out here. Do you like that? I got him at plus 6,600 to win.
That's a small sample size that I'm kind of ignoring a bit. I don't like the win He's been absolutely terrible here, like not even three times here and not a top 100 finish at this event. Like I said, that's not high in my model, but it's something I'm looking at. I do like to see these finish with top 10s. I would be more inclined to maybe put a top 20 bet on him right now. And you said DK in terms of DK dollar. He's actually, I have to update this, but he's a minus two. So he's 25th in odds and 23rd in DK rank for me. So I like it for GPP. I just don't think he's consistent enough for me to consider in cash, or I don't think he's got really that win upside either to put an outright for me to get to a point where I would put an outright bet on him based on his two top tens over the last 2 weeks. I'm looking at like 100-1 kind of thing, 80-1 to 100-1 before I think about it.
All right, I had him at plus 700 top 10. I'll roll off a couple more top 10s that I had just for anyone that wants to steam him or tail some of these. Patrick Cantlay at plus 250 top 10, like that. Finau plus 450 top 10. Colin Marikawa plus 335. And then I got, I kind of put in Poulter and Poston at their plus 700 each to finish top 10. So that's kind of where I landed on some of these top 10s bets. Anything else final? I feel like we're bonding again around golf in a way that I didn't think we were going to.
I mean, we just made 50 minutes just go by like absolutely nothing when we're used to doing like 30-minute podcasts. So, yeah, I could sit here and talk for 2 hours, but I got to go update some sheets. I'm working on the putting splits right now. I'm going to be adding that to the sheet this week. Looking at this one's a little bit tricky because of the bent / poa. So it's bent grass with poa that kind of grows through. Poa is a pain in the ass, more like a weed. So it's kind of hard to break down those putting splits, but I'm going to do my best and look back at some courses that have a mixture of that bent and poa grass. Put that on the sheet here this week, put it in the model. And then the other thing that I'm working on is my sheet looking at DraftKings salary, DK points, and points per dollar value over the last, however many tournaments for every player in the field. So I will be posting that in the chat on DFSR as well. And I will actually post it as a sheet on the Chris's Sheets page as well.
All right. Great stuff as always. DFSR.com/membership can get you access right now to the PGA Optimizer, which I've been really pretty pumped about. It's going to keep you going all weekend. It's going to have the cash game lineups and GBP lineups for DraftKings and FanDuel for the weekend, but plus all those showdown slates and the aforementioned
Sunday
showdown.
Don't forget round four.
Yeah, I was going to say the aforementioned showdown for round four, which, again, seems like everyone just doesn't understand the rules. So go check that out. DFSR.com/memberships. You also go over to Patreon and visit Chris. Chris, give out your Patreon and your Twitter real quick because I always spell it wrong because I think I'm adding an E where I shouldn't be. Give out your Patreon and Twitter real quick.
Twitter is at Jaeger_bombs9, and my Patreon is www.patreon.com/JaegerBombs, all one word.
There you go. All right, buddy. Enjoy the weekend's worth of golf. I'm sure I'll text you all weekend when I get mad about some guy lipping out a putt that has me miss the cut. Other than that, I'll talk to you soon.
Later.